Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 125 of Unblocking Crypto. Al, great to see you again.
Good to see you, Jason.
Man, we had an interesting past 7 days or so. I think the big news that I guess I'm pretty excited about is theoretically the SEC has ended their investigation on Ethereum. The only problem is they haven't really deemed it not a security. They just said they're going to stop investigating it, which I think is positive news. If you look at Consensus, which is the company that owns MetaMask, they are still pursuing their lawsuit with the SEC because the SEC, I guess, sent them a Wells notice saying that they acted as a possible broker-dealer, being the owner of the MetaMask wallet. So hopefully we'll get something figured out at some point. I mean, will the SEC ever admit that it's not a security? Who knows at this point? But it looks like the world is moving forward as if Ethereum's not going to be a security for a long, long time.
Yeah, that's probably a safe bet for the market at this point. Just the judge ruling that XRP was a security early in its existence, but once it was traded on the secondary market by exchanges, then it's a commodity. So if they kind of have a similar idea for Ethereum, then I think it sneaks by the securities tag. So yeah, we'll see. I think, you know, things are kind of bullish for Ethereum with the ETFs coming out, and then that investigation stopping is definitely at least neutral. So not bad.
Consensus still seems to be kind of active in terms of everything else crypto related. They also asked the IRS to delay this new reporting structure that they have, that new form. I think we talked about it a long time ago that they wanted every non-custodial wallet that you have to be listed, and it's just a freaking cluster. And there's still a lot of question marks on the form that they sent out. I guess, shocker. I mean, nobody from the government seems to be able to provide any direction at all these days. So we'll see what actually happens. I think the last day to provide comments was last week, which means that maybe we'll know here some more things here in a few weeks or so on what is actually going to happen.
Yeah, that's when the government passed, or the IRS passed the thing where it was like anything over $600 sold on eBay or Venmo or whatever, you got to claim it. I'm like, this is not something that can be enforced. Nobody's going to do it. And B, if they do it, it's going to overwhelm the IRS anyway. And so, surprise, they backed off of that and went back to the old $20,000 rule. So I feel like the same thing's going to happen here, even if they're dumb enough to pass it where people have to tag their information to go along with their wallet addresses. If you don't, it's unenforceable because how are they going to find you? And if everyone does it, they can't keep up with that anyway. So it's just a bad law. It's just a bad rule. So it's a low concern for me.
Yeah. So I think what has been concerning for a lot of people lately has been Bitcoin somewhat crashing. And for you and I, it's kind of laugh about it because it's like, okay, this is just par for the course for Bitcoin, but there's a ton of things actually kind of happening. So I figured it might be good to address some of those. We've talked a little bit about Mt. Gox, and they're pretty much saying that they have 140,000-ish Bitcoin. That's what, close to $9 billion that they are planning to distribute by October of this year. You have Germany that just had $3 billion of Bitcoin that they decided to sell off, and I think they sold off like 300 and something million in 20 or 48 hours. You have the miners who typically after every halving have kind of a capitulation. So they sold off, I think, $2 billion of Bitcoin in the last month, which they haven't done that for well over a year. Even some of the whales, the Bitcoin whales have been selling off, even though a majority of them are still acquiring. So it seems to be everybody kind of taking profits. And then you got a lot of the hedge funds that seem to be buying the ETF and shorting the futures. to lock in like 15% income gains kind of thing. So it's,
yep,
there's just a ton of things going on, and it's one of those, hey, it's still what, less than 20% drawdown. So this is normal. It usually happens 6 to 12 times during a bull run. So take advantage of it while you can.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks. Like, nobody likes to watch that number go down. But if we can flush out the Mt. Gox uncertainty that's been going on forever, and the stuff like Germany, it's, to me, the Germany selling their confiscated Bitcoin, that sort of thing's going to happen as we just kind of go through. That alone isn't a big deal. When you start pairing it with things, there's a lot of sell pressure. The miners, like we talked about it last week, like some of them probably ought to just pack it up, take their profits, and you know, their business is kind of over. Because at $60,000 of Bitcoin and pretty normal transaction fees, you know, their revenues are the same as $30,000 Bitcoin in the last epoch. So that's not great. So for me, flush out the Mt. Gox stuff. And I keep hearing mixed reviews on that as to whether or not they're going to distribute it as Bitcoin. Because if I was a Mt. Gox person, I would want my Bitcoin so bad. like, you know, watching Bitcoin go up all those years, and I don't remember what number it was when Mt. Gox went down.
2014 is when all happened. So it was 10 years ago.
So it's, you know, probably around $1,000 to $2,000 per Bitcoin. Yeah. And you're at 60. And so you get 10 years of watching the Bitcoin that you had go up and up and up. And then you get it back. I don't think you sell it immediately, or at least you don't sell a lot of it, you know? And so I don't, unless they liquidate that Bitcoin and distribute it as dollars, I don't see why that would be a huge sell pressure. Sure. I mean, 9 billion, even if it's 10%, right? Okay. So that's $900 million. That's nothing to sneeze at. But I mean, if you happen to hit it on a good day for the ETFs, then it's a wash. So I don't really sweat the Mt. Gox thing. I did see this as a buying opportunity, so I bought more. And, you know, when the price goes down, I buy a little bit. So I was telling a friend of mine, I bought Bitcoin in every decade of thousands. Like, the only thing I missed was triple digits. And so I don't mind buying a little bit at, you know, at 60,000. And it's funny because when this thing dropped down to like 64, 62, 60, 59, the people are like, oh man, we might see 48,000. You know, there's nothing but air between 58 and 48,000. And 48,000 was like the lowest number I heard as an estimate for Bitcoin dropping here. Nobody talked about going to zero. Nobody talked about revisiting 20,000, which was the previous low. Nobody. But then when it goes up to like 68 or 70,000, it's like, oh, we might hit 200 to 240,000 this year. Bitcoin's going to 1 million or 8 million or 10 million. So it's like, just like that asymmetry of, if you buy at 60, you may miss and it may go down to 48. But if you don't buy at 60 or more, it might be going to 200 to 300, 1 million to 8 million, 10 million. And it's like, so that's why if I'm, you know, buying at 60,000, it's not moving the needle a lot for my portfolio. But what else am I going to do with it? What else am I going to buy with money right now that's not just consumable? The only thing that feels like it's on sale that has a good chance of going up is bonds and bond funds, because as they drop the interest rate, the value of the bonds go up. I don't really want to own bonds. So the only thing that's a decent buy right now is the thing I want the least. So I'm like, why don't I just buy more of the stuff I want the most of? Even though, you know, yeah, is Bitcoin on sale? Not really. It's close to its all-time high. But is it on sale relative to where I think it's going to go? Yeah, for sure.
We've talked a little bit about this in the past, where rate cuts should theoretically help Bitcoin and crypto in general, right? And that's been one of those things that there hasn't really been a lot of insight on what's going to happen. We thought we're going to have maybe 5 rate cuts this year, and now it's turning into 1. And as soon as that does happen, I think the floodgates will somewhat open, right? But it's right now, if you look at the ETFs, they're down, but 80% of the buying has been from retail. you still haven't had all the investment groups really get into buying Bitcoin ETFs. So once that happens, I mean, that's a whole nother stream of income that's going to go crazy. And if you look at it, holy cow, BlackRock did 20 million of assets under management faster than any ETF in the history of ETFs, right? So it's, the potential is there for it to grow, and hopefully we'll see some positive things with the Ethereum ETFs, and it's just going to kind of compound with each other.
Yeah, I read today that I guess there was a leak that Morgan Stanley was set to approve the Bitcoin ETFs on their platform by August of this year. And we've talked about it, like some of these, like the bigger the institution, the longer the due diligence period to approve things like this. And so, you know, it is a small amount of, you know, it's not like the institutions have arrived, right? The institutions are arriving. And so bull run's still intact. Bull thesis is still intact. Like the fundamentals of Bitcoin have not changed at all. And, you know, the fear and greed index is at a 30, which is like comfortably in the fear range, which feels right. Like, you know, it's for a while there, it was at like, you know, 65, 66,000. It felt terrible, but it was like an extreme greed, you know, and I was like, well, this is a terrible time to buy. And so for me, you know, that means you're going to have your weak-handed Bitcoin people that are probably just buying because somebody else bought, and so they see they're tired of other people making money on Bitcoin. So, you know, they're too busy to learn about Bitcoin, and they're struggling to make enough money to just pay their bills. So they don't have a ton of discretionary money to invest in Bitcoin. And so, you know, if there looks like they're going to lose money, they're going to pull it out. So I think that cohort is kind of what we're looking at now. But 6 months from now, man, we'll be in December. We should, if we don't see, you know, a decent price run by in 6 months, then that'll just be weird. Because I imagine we're going to have one rate cut in the next 6 months. And just that, yeah, and just that shift, yeah, from, hey, we're raising rates or we're neutral to we're dropping rates, I think is enough to get the investor sentiment, especially for the big boys that know that the tide rolls based on the interest rate. And if the tide's coming up, then they're gonna flood into it. So yeah, everything's still intact for me, and so that's why I'm buying Bitcoin at 60,000.
Well, especially if the Fed has never really been great at predicting when they need to do the rate cut, but if they do a 50 basis point rate cut instead of just a 25 basis point, it will be, I think, kind of off to the races. But you talk about the institutions kind of as well. And one of the big ones, Standard Chartered, is about to open a spot Bitcoin and Ethereum trading desk, right? So they're competing with the Coinbases and the Binances of the world and their bank. So this is kind of a big deal to see the banks wanting to get in on this now too, which is exciting to see.
Yeah. I mean, you know, shifting gears to the way banks have kind of converted over. I feel like they're not putting the pressure on their lobbyists to fight Bitcoin. And now they're kind of evolving to how do we make money off of this as well. And I think that's why you see Joe Biden bringing in crypto people to try to turn his political stance around. We haven't talked about Elizabeth Warren in weeks. Like that was red hot for a long time. Like she was constantly battling crypto and Bitcoin and been just making things up. And I mean, I haven't heard her make up anything in months. So to me, you know, that all of that shifting, because there's money to be made by the banks who are, you know, financing the politicians. So yeah, the sentiment is getting better and better and better. It's really, we just need to find liquidity to flood into to jack the price up. And then once the price starts to run, that's when the people start finding liquidity to put in.
Yeah, exactly. There's another thing that I saw that was kind of interesting, and it kind of reminded me of some conversations you and I had back in the day. So Hashdex has been the first company to file for a joint Bitcoin Ethereum fund, where it is a mix of those two based on market cap. And it kind of reminded me of our top 10
fund
that back in the day that we thought, hey, yeah, if we just put all the top 10 cryptos in there and had it ranked by market cap and just had them go in and out, then it would give people that exposure and kind of go from there. So we're starting to see stuff like that, which is exciting.
Man, we were way ahead of these clowns, man.
Yeah,
I know. 7 years ago. Of course, at this point, we'd have so many stable coins. We'd be like, why? Maybe we should change this so that it's the top 10 non-stable coin. Because I actually thought about it because like that URL comes back up, like the renewal notice and things like that. And I'm like, man, that would have been a good fund. But we just didn't know how to run a close-ended investment fund like two dudes that aren't financiers trying to put together something. But, it would have paid off.
Yeah, holy cow. And I think the other thing that I saw that was kind of interesting is in 2 days we have a presidential debate going on in the United States. And I have a feeling crypto will become a piece of that conversation since the Team Red has been talking a lot about that. And Blue is kind of warming up to that as well. But what's been interesting is some of the bigger names in crypto have already started to announce that they're supporting Trump. So Cathie Wood came out and said that she votes based on economics, and because of that, she's voting for Trump. And then both the Winklevoss twins each donated $1 million of Bitcoin to Trump, which I think is more than they can donate. So I think you're only allowed to donate $874,000. So I think they're going to be refunded at some point, but it made a lot of news that they're putting up $1 million each towards Trump.
Yeah, I mean, now that I'm kind of above the fray in politics and I'm like on neither team, I'm very much looking forward to the debate just to see actual people talk for a long period of time instead of these little clips of little gaffes or little mess ups and stuff. And like, yeah, man, if they go up there and they talk for 2.5 hours, they're going to stumble over words from time to time and things like that. But I'm actually going to listen to them talk, which is kind of hard to do. You mentioned some of the crypto guys endorsing Trump. I listened to the All In podcast, and so Chamath and David Sacks held a Trump fundraiser in San Francisco. And then after that fundraiser, they had Trump for an hour on the podcast asking him questions with all four of them. So they got, I can't remember which one is like the anti-Trump hardcore Democrat, but he asked him tough questions. Trump answered everything, not like a politician dancing around it, but like straight up answered him. And so I haven't listened to Trump talk in a long time for a long extended period, but he was way better at talking than he was last time I heard him talk. Because sometimes when you listen to him talk, it sounds like a crazy person, but he like kept his thoughts in a like a linear path. So everybody could follow what he was saying. He didn't just trail off into some random topics that didn't make sense. So if Trump can perform for 2 hours or whatever, however long the debate is, as well as he did on that podcast, and if Biden can perform as well as he did at the State of the Union address, where he got up there and talked for an hour and a half or whatever, I think it'll be pretty awesome. If they're tired or they've got their meds wrong or whatever, this debate could be crazy to watch. But if they don't have a crypto or Bitcoin question raised, I think that it's going to be kind of a bias by omission because it's a CNN debate with Jake Tapper. It's a very blue team friendly moderator and channel. So if they don't bring up Bitcoin and crypto, I think it's like the New York Times style bias where we're just not going to talk about the things that are bad for us. And other than that, if they do bring it up, I think Biden's going to be ready to pivot on crypto and Bitcoin and become neutral at worst and favorable, because I think it's a loser. I think it's a vote loser to be anti Bitcoin and crypto.
Yeah, I mean, my view is I feel like Trump's going to have to find a way to bring it up to try to give himself an edge or force Biden to go down a different path.
Yeah, because they'll definitely talk about technology and innovation. He'll have an opportunity to get that jab in. If I mean, you got to be pretty with it to do that, but we'll see. I mean, these dudes are old, so
yeah. Goodness. So the other thing that was kind of interesting too, from a big picture perspective, Japan, we've kind of talked about that they have their own financial issues, but there was a survey that went out to all the fund managers in Japan. And what was intriguing was more than half of them expect to have Bitcoin exposure in the next 3 years. Right. So we've kind of talked about this as institutions in general take a long time to move, but Japan has been pretty conservative in the past. And this is one of those things where if they're going to be jumping into it, that will be kind of awesome for Bitcoin.
Yeah. I mean, Japan is a legit economy with legit investable income. So it would be good for crypto and Bitcoin to get that kind of, to open up that kind of, you know, I'm sure they're into it, but for half of the institutions to say they expect to have exposure in 3 years, that's substantial.
I think one of the bigger problems still is, and we talked a little bit a long time ago, was that right now Japan makes you pay gains taxes on unrealized gains on crypto, right? So there's a whole mess there that they have to figure out how to work around. And there was kind of a way for certain companies to kind of get around that, so you could kind of do what the whole MicroStrategy thing was and buy MicroStrategy, and then you weren't paying the taxes on the gains from that perspective. So I think they got to figure that piece out from their end to make it start to work a little bit cleaner. But speaking of MicroStrategy, they finally made their purchase. It's yep. Another $750+ million of Bitcoin, and now they're approaching what, almost $15 billion of Bitcoin.
It's wild. So to tie the last two topics together, so Dylan LeClaire is now working for a Japanese company, and I don't recall the name of it, but they are copying the MicroStrategy model, and so they're selling convertible notes, buying Bitcoin with the proceeds, and they're giving all those Japanese individuals and corporations an ability to invest in Bitcoin and get Bitcoin exposure without having to play by the crypto tax rules. And so they just bought, and now they're buying like $6 million worth of Bitcoin at a clip, but they're a way smaller company than MicroStrategy.
I think that's Metaplanet.
Metaplanet. That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
So I think, but they are planning to buy a lot more. I mean, they bought like 1 million, now it's 6 million, and their plan is to do another 15 or 17 million, right? So they're going crazy for their size. And from a performance perspective, they're outperforming MicroStrategy. Right? Granted, they're a lot smaller, and I think it'll work for a little bit, but that won't be kind of a long-term thing for them.
Yeah, but I mean, because MicroStrategy gives corporate bonds and fixed income investors a way to get Bitcoin exposure. And so I feel like that on the Japanese side, they're giving different entities the ability to get Bitcoin exposure that don't have it any other way. And I think there's a big advantage there. Like, and that's why MicroStrategy trades like basically twice their market cap is twice their Bitcoin holding. And their business is not like, I think they do like $50 million a year in earnings. So it's such a small, it's almost not a part of their business anymore.
Yeah. So we talked about Ethereum earlier. I think there was some interesting news from my perspective on Ethereum. Their gas fees have just hit some new lows. So they had an upgrade not too long ago, which mainly helped out kind of the L2 gas fees. And this has kind of affected just overall gas fees as well. So the big deal about this, and shoot, their network activity is up like 85% in the past year, right? So it's still helped. They're still growing. But because the fees are so much lower, the burn that they have for every transaction has been lower. So they have gone from a deflationary asset to an inflationary asset. I think it's like 0.45% is where they are right now, which is, I think, still less than where Bitcoin is right now. But it's just kind of interesting to see that things are changing on Ethereum. And we used to talk about, back in the day, it was a couple hundred dollars to do gas fee transactions on Ethereum. And now it's sub a dollar, sometimes even, usually even cheaper than Bitcoin if you're not doing it on the Lightning Network.
Yeah. Well, that's good to know, because I feel like all my Ethereum stuff is just stuck wherever it is, because the gas fees were crazy.
Yeah, it's getting way cheaper right now. The other thing that was kind of cool that I saw was Cosmos, and if you aren't familiar with Cosmos, they're almost like a layer zero project out there that is really about interoperability. And they are in the process of voting on a Bitcoin bridge. So their largest decentralized exchange is Osmosis, and they're planning on making a fee-free Bitcoin bridge to be able to get Bitcoin into the Cosmos ecosystem for free and move things around. So I think that's great, right? I mean, the more that everything can be connected, the better off it'll be. It's not one of these guys is going to win everything. It's if they build it all together, then they'll win. So I like to see this. I'm always worried to see the bridge piece because that's usually where all the hacks happen and all the problems. So, but at least they're heading down the right direction. And I think there's a lot of smart people in there that hopefully they'll get it figured out here shortly.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't heard Cosmos in a long time. I feel like I bought some. I have to go back and look, but you know, like you said, the more they can interoperate, the more they can work together, like the more likely they are to find some use cases. And if it's a use case and they're using Bitcoin, there's just another place for Bitcoin to hide and for, you know, to improve the supply shock to, you know, cause like in the short term, I'd love to see some price escalation. You know, we've talked about it. Like we've been doing this for a long time. It'd be really nice to be proven right. Like once we hit six figures, I'm like, okay, we're right. Like it's going to keep going because 100,000, there's a big difference between 90,000 and 105,000. And there's like less difference between 105 and 180, you know? So, you know, if we can get through some of that in the short term, that'll be nice for me psychologically. And then, you know, I mean, I saw a chart the other day that kind of talked about, all right, this amount of Bitcoin is in the ETFs and corporate holdings. This amount of Bitcoin is likely lost forever. This amount of Bitcoin is held by long-term holders that haven't touched it in 5 years. And it's like, man, you start carving out those big chunks of Bitcoin that's held in those categories. There's like close to 50% of the Bitcoin outstanding is kind of available for buying and selling. It's like if other cryptos start to scoop up some of that stuff and use it in their ecosystem, that's Bitcoin that isn't going to come back out again too. So, you know, yeah, it's probably not 100,000 Bitcoin to an initiative like that, but everything matters. Like 20 Bitcoin, 50 Bitcoin, if you have enough of them, if you have 500 of those, okay, now you're talking about a legitimate amount of Bitcoin being sucked off into, you know, into areas that I don't consider to be areas that Bitcoin, you know, gets pulled away from the market. So yeah, give it to me. I'm cool with it.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like Cosmos and Polkadot seem to be creating a lot of IP or code that everybody else around the industry is using. So I think as long as we continue to move towards the path of everything interops with each other and we don't have to go to some centralized exchange to go from one person to another, then I think we're all going to be better off. But I did want to change to talk about Nigeria. We talked, what, weeks ago about U.S. Congress really pushing on Biden and Secretary of State to do something about that. They dropped Nigeria dropped one of the charges on the guy, the U.S. citizen that they're holding. They did have a couple of U.S. Congress people go over there, one from like Pennsylvania and one from Arkansas, I think. And they pretty much said, this is ridiculous. The conditions are horrible. He needs to be let out. I think they're pushing Biden to do something again. Nigeria said, we're not doing anything wrong. They've now delayed the court date, I think, until the beginning of July for the money laundering. So it is still a little bit of a mess. And what's crazy to me is that there's a list that's out there on the amount of freedom that each citizen has. Nigeria is at the top of the list of most freedoms lost, which is kind of crazy to me. So the rule that they have there, you can now go to jail for raising the national flag, tweeting, posting on social media, receiving some funds from an international investor, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous of all this stuff is happening that's happening. And there's a lot of people that this has happened to that have kind of moved away and are really pushing that Bitcoin is really the only tool that's, I guess, a way for them to fight the dictatorship of what's going on over there. So, and it's funny, they have a dictator that's bad, whereas El Salvador has a dictator that I feel like the rest of the world wants. So,
hey, yeah, I mean, it's like, it will take a benevolent dictator to get Nigeria out of this rut. Like, if you have a two-party system, I don't know that you can pull a country out of a rut, because team A is going to have good ideas to do it, and team B has to say they're bad ideas because there's only two parties. So I'm not sure, you know, how long it'll take for Nigeria to turn around, but they've got a ton of resources and assets. They've got a lot of, I mean, every Nigerian person I've met has been bright and talented. Now, granted, they're outside of Nigeria for a reason, because they're able to, you know, do so, but they got a huge population. They have a ton of people. And so for them to just kind of wreck themselves like this is, you know, I guess it's pretty ordinary in the grand scheme of like countries in history, but yeah, if you could turn that country around, I think it would turn around quickly, but you got to give people freedoms back, and you know, you got to start kind of having rules and laws that make sense and are enforceable. But yeah, when you were talking about El Salvador, I mean, that's pretty much what he did, is came in and did some common sense stuff. He had to step on a couple of toes to do it. But if you don't do that, then everything stays the same. So yeah, I'm curious to see how long this guy stays in Nigeria. Like, this is taking a long time. I'm sure the conditions aren't great.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those things where you wanted to go to El Salvador to check it out. Nigeria is the last place that you want to go right now, based on what you're doing over there.
But I mean, that's what Bitcoin's for, man. It's for people that need it, you know? I feel like it's got the weirdest dynamic of who wants Bitcoin. People that have extra funds that don't know what else to do with them want Bitcoin. And people that don't have any money because their currency is falling apart want Bitcoin. And in the middle, it's not as attractive. You know, it's really weird. It's like a real barbell investor syndrome for Bitcoin, where if you're, you know, middle class, lower middle class, you're kind of working your butt off doing all those things, but you don't have, like I said earlier, you don't have the time or the money to learn and invest in Bitcoin. So I bet that's a very small amount of Bitcoin held in that cohort. But at the top and bottom, that's probably where you see the most people with Bitcoin as a percentage of that cohort. So it's pretty wild. I mean, how many things do rich and poor people want?
Like, yeah, exactly.
It's not a lot.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. So one of the other things that was interesting too, we've talked about ARK and I guess 21 Shares, whatever you want to call it. They just hired one of the director of iShares from the US, from BlackRock. So now you have BlackRock, which was theoretically probably the most successful Bitcoin ETF. That guy is now headed over to 21 Shares on the ARK ETF funds to see what he can do over there. So I'm excited to see what happens, but I think this is kind of seems to be commonplace where people keep leaving BlackRock and going to some of these smaller companies to make their mark on the world.
Yeah, I mean, part of me says BlackRock is the reason he's successful. Like, you know, it's easy to have an awesome ETF launch when you have the BlackRock name and Salesforce behind you. But, you know, from a customer standpoint, I don't see much of a difference between any of the ETFs other than liquidity and management fees. So I don't know how he improves that. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see kind of an old school money guy from BlackRock go into more of a crypto native company like 21 Shares and, you know, work with Cathie Wood and be more crypto friendly and not just crypto, like just fleecing or trying to just make money off of crypto, trying to make US dollars off of crypto. Whereas the other side of the coin is trying to make more crypto off of crypto, or like trying to make more Bitcoin off of Bitcoin. So there's a big mental leap that he's going to have to make where it's like, oh, you guys aren't trying to make dollars. Like, okay, all right, let me get my head around that for a little bit.
Yeah, I also was looking at some of the more recent blockchain use cases that have popped up, which, I mean, we've been talking about this for a while. The more that we can see people actually using blockchain and crypto, then the more exciting that's going to be long term. And what was interesting to me, we've talked a lot about tokenization and how that will theoretically take off in the near future. The repo market, the repurchase agreements and the other forms of financing for securities, I guess I read an article about how much that's happening on private blockchains right now. I mean, to the tune of $1.5 trillion a month, which is pretty substantial, right? I mean, if you look at JP Morgan, they're doing on their, I think it's Onyx blockchain, like $2 billion a day of transaction volumes. And then the bigger one is a company called, I think, Broadridge. Their day is over $50 billion of activity a day. So, and what there's people out there saying is what they have created is something that could be used in the rest of the tokenization market as well. But it's exciting just to see that tokenization is taking off. I mean, you've heard Larry Fink talk about everything's going to be tokenized in the future. There's a lot apparently that's tokenized that nobody's talking about because it's all being run on private blockchains right now. But don't be surprised if that does come more to the public blockchains and a public ledger instead of just being behind a wall, right?
Yeah, I mean, you got JP Morgan, other places like that using this in the background. Their people are going to get more and more familiar with it and comfortable with it. And that's going to be kind of a narrative change for those guys. So I'll take that. And to go along with that, I read that Tron, let's see, USDT on Tron, so Tether on Tron, had more transaction volume than Visa on the daily.
Wow.
So you're talking about between what you just talked about on the $50 billion a day worth of activity on the private blockchains, and then you're talking about just Tether on Tron, not Tether as a whole, has got more daily volume than Visa. So it makes sense because I think Visa does, you know, you need to have some kind of credit in order to work with Visa. With Tron, you just need to have the money. Or with Tether, you just need to have the money. And so that's a good sign my assumption is that's on the lower side of the socio-demographic chart. You've got a lot of people that don't have a lot of money that are unbanked, that are in countries where currencies are terrible, and they're using Tether and they use Tron because it's so cheap. That's a lot. I mean, that's worth thinking about, that Tether is doing more transactions than Visa.
Yeah, that's crazy. I think Tether was in the news here recently too, because they're going to stop minting their stablecoin on Algorand and EOS, which kind of amazed EOS is still around at this point. But Algorand is one of those that I think there was a lot of hype for quite a while on what they could do in the future. So very interesting.
Yeah, stablecoins. I mean, we talked about it. Like that one makes a lot of sense. And what I could see is stablecoins getting more and more people familiar with using blockchain and crypto and all of that. And then that, once you get used to scanning QR codes from somebody's phone to pay them, and you know, oh, this works and it happens, and then I think that's a very short jump from that into Bitcoin than US dollars, handing people paper dollars or using your bank to transfer money to Bitcoin. Like that's a big jump. So yeah, I think it's good for Bitcoin. I think it's good for the people that are using Tether on Tron. And I think at some point Visa is going to have to come out with some response, or they're going to be the, you know, the Kodak camera of financial transactions.
Yeah, it seems like MasterCard is getting really involved in the crypto space, but Visa hasn't really been.
No, we haven't heard anything from Visa.
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about Bitcoin mining in the past too, and Marathon has just announced they're doing a little test over in Finland. So I think there's like, what, 11,000 people over in a small city in Finland. They're putting I think it's 2 megawatt mining facility there, and they're running all the pipes from the hot water that comes out of the cooling and Bitcoin mining to all the homes to help heat the homes. So they think that they might be able to use a lot of the power that's created to possibly create an additional income stream for them to help heat all these homes. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Granted, Finland is super cold, and I think you probably need that. There's a lot of places, like we're in Georgia right now, where I don't want hot water, I don't want cold water right now. But they're not putting, well, actually, they are putting a lot of Bitcoin mining in Georgia, but just because it's friendly. But there's a lot of other places that have all this thermal energy that could be used to create mining, and then they could turn that into something that's beneficial for all the homes too. So interesting to see. Hopefully it'll work out. But I think we've all kind of realized that Bitcoin mining is not hurting the environment. It's actually helping. And that's what everybody's starting to realize, except for some of the few people on the far left.
Yeah, I mean, central heating is been kind of an offshoot from power plants for a long time, because they'll have excess heat that they can't use coming off the reheater cycle on the turbine that's still hot. And so they'll send steam into, like, if you're in a cold area, then they'll pipe steam over to a neighboring facility or something else to keep things warm, and then pump back the steam, because it's gonna go into the boiler and through all the tubes to get heated back up again. And they can make a little bit of money on the side by just building some pipes. So it sounds like that's kind of where that Finnish company is seeing some ability. But the beauty of that is they want that water coming back cold so that they can heat it back up again from the mm-hmm. exhaust heat from the whatever kind of heat exchanger they're using from the miners. So yeah, send it out there and use it to heat homes and come back as cool as you can get it, so that you can keep pulling more heat off of the miners. So yeah, I'll take it. 2 megawatts is nothing to sneeze at. I mean, Finland's not, there's not a whole lot of people and a whole lot of power up there. So like that's probably a pretty big project for Finland.
Yeah. Yeah. So the other thing that I saw too, and this is more of just a reminder, we've talked about how important security is. So CoinStats apparently came out and said there's a security issue with some of their wallets that were created on their platform. Right. And to be very careful about what's happening, and probably you want to move your funds. So that's one of those things we've talked about for a while, is if you're not familiar with self-custody outside of a company, then you need to figure that out and move a majority of your crypto there. I mean, I understand there's always going to be that certain piece of it that you probably keep on an exchange, but most of it needs to be somewhere that nobody can access.
Yeah, if you've got a sizable portfolio of crypto or Bitcoin, you can't leave it on exchanges, and it's just too much risk. I mean, yeah, you want to leave some to balance out the risk of losing your seed phrase or something going wrong. I get it, but man, I don't think you can trust anybody. Like, I mean, Coinbase is the most trustworthy, but between the ETFs custodying their Bitcoin with them and just having the huge exchange volume, they're a huge target for hackers and stuff to go after. So to me, you need to take some responsibility if you've got a sizable position in Bitcoin.
Yeah, and it seems like the Chinese hackers and the North Koreans are really ramping things up on coming after crypto these days too. So be careful.
Yeah.
That's all that I had on my end. What else did I miss from your perspective?
I mean, I talked about everything I had, including not Bitcoin stuff like Tether on Tron. So I think that's as good as I can do.
We'll mark that down on the calendar. Holy cow. Awesome. Well, as always, Hal, it's great chatting with you. And I'm looking forward to chatting next week and seeing what's changed at that point.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Jason.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below, and hope to see you there.